Et si on allumait un petit peu la télé?
Sur la troisième chaîne, pour voir Aziz à l'instant.
J'imagine la prochaine.
Pendant que je lui montre mon cul, la redevance met bien mon portefeuille à nu. Dans le lit, il y a des tas de miettes de pain. Cette télé de merde, le film ne vaut rien.
On fait un câlin, dis, tu viens
faire l'amour encore. Dis, tu veux ma.
Comme vous pouvez vous en apercevoir, chers auditeurs, le bruit du troupeau de pingouins est intense. Malgré tout, j'essaie de m'approcher. Je m'approche actuellement. Alors, Pierre Vassiliou, que faites-vous dans cette région?
Eh bien voilà, ça fait un an et demi qu'on nous...
That's Étienne Donné behind us right now. That's Étienne Donné behind us right now. We just heard from Pierre Vassiliou doing Le Pied from Qui c'est celui-là, 1974. We heard Basse Deference Organization. They were just one of the accompanists to the runaway train, which, by the way, ended in great news. Everybody was okay. So we played the celebratory song by Pierre Vassiliou. Vast Efforts Organization with 20 years in an ice cream truck set from there. The Voice of the Taniwha from 2003. From Us Who Have So Many. Foster Neville with Break Failure à Chapelle en la Frith. And The Runaway Train in there. A document of the conversation between the dispatcher or the controller and the engineer as a train in New Brunswick in Canada ran out of control. But it was fine. He took on too many cars. 1987. Frederick Crone accompanying that as well. Nice piano piece in memoriam of Yuri Gagarin called Cosmonaut. That's everything we heard. My name's Scott. I look forward to seeing you next week. This is Freeform Radio WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online, WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Tectonic is just a moment away. Bye.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst, I'll be your host for the next hour. Thanks so much for joining. I have a show today in which I'm going to catch you up on a trend. I was going to say it's a recent development, but it's several developments that together form a trend that is really worth knowing about because we're just at the beginning of this, sadly. The title of the show is AI is Spreading Where It Doesn't Belong. And there you have it. There's your trend. So what I want to do is I want to catch you up on where AI has been spreading recently. Again, as I say, this is just the beginning, so I'm not trying to do this as an exhaustive account, because even if I gave you an exhaustive list of every place AI was spreading today, it would only be a drop in the bucket compared to where this technology is going to be spreading in the months and years to come. But for now, it's important for us just to note this snapshot, even an excerpt of the things that are happening today, to serve as a snapshot of where we are right now, so that when we look back in a few months or in a year or two, we can say, yep, we at least documented the beginning of this, or near the beginning. I won't pretend that this is the first time you're hearing this. This isn't the very beginning, but we are in the early stages of AI's spread throughout life and work and society and civic institutions of all stripes. And the news is not that great, friends. I have to say it's not great. Now, I want to start with a caveat before I really dive in, and I want to respond to the response that's out there in the minds of some listeners who are saying, well, what are you against all technology? Are you against all AI? Are you against AI in theory? I mean, I used it just the other day for XYZ and it was fine. So let me just say this as a caveat, as a disclaimer before we dive in. Yes, of course, AI can have some, I think limited, but it can have some useful part to play in some situations. This is not a categorical, I don't intend this to be a categorical demonization or categorical rejection of AI as an idea. There can be some useful uses. I mean, you've heard occasionally that AI is used in, for example, some healthcare situations. Maybe a radiologist used an AI to help spot a tumor in an X-ray. Great. If that has helped a radiologist and that has, by extension, helped a patient, great. I'm all for that where there are actual gains and benefits and measurable, I don't know, good things that come off of AI. Who could be against that? And so, no, I am not suggesting that we throw out any trace of AI anywhere. On the other hand, most of the AI, I'd say the vast majority of AI, as it is being developed and deployed to affect us in all the ways I'm going to go through today, is all coming from a handful of companies that frankly do not have a very good track record for their other launches. So if you look back in the history of these big tech companies in Silicon Valley, you see just a landscape littered with harmful outcomes, you know, exploiting the vulnerable or deceiving citizens, or wasting resources, harming ecosystems and the people who live near them. I mean, all sorts of waste and harm and exploitation have come off of their platforms in the past. Why do we think that their AI engines and platforms are suddenly going to turn the corner and start delivering good outcomes all of a sudden. It's just not going to happen. So just in theory, I am against the predatory behavior of these multi-trillion dollar companies that do not have our interests in mind. And those are the companies who are, for the most part, building these AI platforms that are affecting us. So that's really what I'm against. I'm against the concentration of power in Silicon Valley as an enablement for them to extend the shameful track record that they have built for themselves over the last 10 plus years. And that's what we're facing. On a personal level, I'll say, and this is just one anecdote, so I'm not trying to make a big deal out of this, but I share this anecdote from my own life just because for some listeners, I think there's going to be some people out there who this resonates with, because they'll say, oh, I had a similar experience. This is going to ring true for some people. I thought a few days ago, this is true story from my own life, why don't I try AI to do a simple task? Because we're hearing every day, I mean, the bros and the associated tech media that are aligned with the bros, which is most of the tech media, not all of it, but most, is aligned with the bros, singing the praises, boosting, and delivering the hype, and spinning the fantasy about what AI is going to do. And you hear every day about the amazing things these AI platforms could do. They're going to make you so much more productive. So everything is going to become so much more efficient. You can address them in normal language. We're even starting to have agents where you can instruct the agent to do a multi-step task and it'll go off on its own and then come back and report to you. Okay, sir or ma'am, I have completed the following steps. It's this. We are living in a new age. It's like the invention of fire itself. I've heard all of these things. I've heard and read all of it. It's so tedious. But I thought, you know, since I'm doing this AI is spreading where it doesn't belong episode, let me, in good faith, let me try to do a fairly simple task. So I had, and this was something I needed to get done. I was happy to do it myself. It was in a text file. I had a list of, let's say, about 20 names of organizations that I needed alphabetized. It's just one of those things that comes up in the day-to-day work. You're working on whatever. You need a certain list of these text things to be alphabetized for some reason. Fine. I thought, you know, I could go load this up into a spreadsheet and do a sorting algorithm, or I could just, it's only 20 or so items, I could just do it by hand. But you know what? Since I have this episode coming up, let me feed this into one of the big AI large language models and see if it can do it. And there was nothing secret or whatever about this list. There's just a list of 20 organizations because, you know, friends, anything you put into one of these large language models goes into its training database. So if you don't want something to be, you know, surveilled and or regurgitated by this text extrusion machine later, don't put it in the first place. Don't ever prompt it with something that you don't want shared to the entire world later. But this was just a pretty bland list of organizations. So I put it in, and the prompt was, as you would expect, something like alphabetize this. And the LLM said, yes, I will do that right away. And it came back a few seconds later with a list that was that seemed to be alphabetized, and I looked over it, and one of the organizations was now listed twice, and one was out of order, out of alphabetical order, that is. And I then had to prompt it again, saying, why did you take organization X, and why did you list it twice? And the LLM, in a very chirpy, natural language tone, said, oh, sorry, yes, that was my mistake. I'm so sorry about that. The reason was blah, 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 and it said something that made no sense. And, you know, I turned it off. I cleared that session, and I closed the browser window, and I turned it off. And I thought to myself, this is the state of the art after something like $700 billion collectively by big tech having been invested in these AI systems. It still does not reach the quality of a spreadsheet sorting algorithm that one could have had in, I don't know, probably VisiCalc in whatever year that was, 1989 or something. I mean, it's over 30 years of software development, and we have actually regressed. We have regressed. And so one would think, okay, LLMs were kind of fun for a moment. We could make little limericks, and kids wrote lots of term papers that they shouldn't have done. But anyway, people used it for various reasons. But let's be serious. We're not actually going to use this for anything serious, anything legitimate, are we? And that was really fed into the genesis of this episode, which we'll get into. So my own experience, to make a short story long, is that I have not found any indication that it's this major productivity improvement, simply because you have to spend at least as much time going back and double checking the output of these things to make sure that they didn't introduce any new errors. So I don't see it. So this AI, this idea, this technology, this set of platforms continues to ooze into civic and social and economic life. And there was this paper that came out by two professors at Boston University Law School. This is just recently, from December 8, 2025, by Woody Hartzog and Jessica Silby up at BU Law School. And it's a paper called How AI Destroys Institutions. And I'm just going to read you a brief excerpt from the introduction, or from the summary, which you can click through. By the way, all of these links are available on the playlist, on the episode page, if you go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and click the episode for AI spreading to where it doesn't belong. There's a link to this paper, How AI Destroys Institutions. And here's what Hartzog and Silby write. If you wanted to create a tool that would enable the destruction of institutions that prop up democratic life, you could not do better than artificial intelligence. Authoritarian leaders and technology oligarchs are deploying AI systems to hollow out public institutions with an astonishing alacrity. Institutions that structure public governance, rule of law, education, healthcare, journalism, and families are all on the chopping block to be optimized by AI. Then they continue later. AI systems are built to function in ways that degrade and are likely to destroy our crucial civic institutions. The affordances of AI systems erode expertise, short-circuit decision-making, and isolate people from one another. They are anathema to the kind of evolution, transparency, cooperation, and accountability that give vital institutions their purpose and sustainability. In short, current AI systems are a death sentence for civic institutions, and we should treat them as such. And if you're interested, friends, in learning more about what Hartzog and Silby have to say about this, about how AI is this universal solvent of civic institutions, including the family, by the way, go to the Tectonic website, click into that paper, and read it for yourself. This is all to say, and I'm reading this first on today's show, because I'm just trying to give you a framework to realize, to understand, at least what these experts are saying the stakes are. This is not simply a question of, well, the workplace is asking me to use this tool that actually is kind of dumb. I mean, it may be that, but it's so, so much bigger than that. That the spread of AI to where it doesn't belong is threatening everything around us. As they said, public governance, rule of law, education, healthcare, journalism, and your family. All of those are vulnerable to the spread of AI. That's why I think this is so important for us to talk about and to mark this moment. As I said, this is roughly the beginning of the spread of this technology. So it's important for us to see where this is headed early. Now, I also want to say something about the scale of investment that big tech has made into AI. I mentioned a figure of $700 billion. this is what I have read from various experts out there estimating what big tech companies like Amazon and Facebook, Meta and Google and Amazon and others have, and OpenAI, which has a major investment from Microsoft, and Anthropic, which has major money from Google. All of those companies have made huge investments in AI infrastructure. You know, the hiring the engineers to build the models, the training, the data centers that are necessary, all of the power that's necessary to go into the data centers. I mean, all of this together comes out to close to $1 trillion. I mean, I think it's north of $700 billion that has gone into AI infrastructure. And what has this created so far? We're going to get into some of the effects. But if you just look at the investment at close to $1 trillion, as Ed Zitron points out, this is back on October 31, 2025, Zitron writes that big tech needs $2 trillion in AI revenue in the next several years, that is by 2030, or they wasted their CapEx, that is their investment. So this is Zitron. How does any of this become worthwhile? He says, I have ultimately come to a brutal conclusion. Due to the onerous costs of building data centers, buying GPUs, that is the chips that run these things, and running AI services, big tech has to add $2 trillion in AI revenue in the next 4 years. So if we look at the numbers right now, friends, it is not looking good for big tech. It is really not looking good. And I think that is why in recent weeks, Sam Altman has gone public floating the idea that sort of kind of maybe if things go south for OpenAI, maybe OpenAI at this point with so much investment is essentially too big to fail. And if you know that phrase from the 2008 mortgage crisis, you know what that means, that Sam Altman kind of sort of maybe is floating the idea of the American taxpayer paying for a backstop for OpenAI if it crashes, if this AI bubble pops, which would happen if and when people finally figure out that big tech is not going to make over $2 trillion in revenue from this error-prone, incredibly wasteful platform of technologies. And I think that's another element to this argument, that the stakes are really high. Civic institutions are on the chopping block, as Silby and Hartzog put it, and it's not looking good for big tech's investment of about $750 billion already. Given how much money they need to make on AI, it's unlikely that we're going to escape some sort of a crash at some point. Now, I'm no forecaster. I'm not giving any stock advice. Okay, I'm not an investment advisor or expert. I'm just reading from these other sources what it looks like would have to happen in order for us to avoid a major downturn for AI stocks, and I don't see it happening. So there we have the setup. Everything, the stakes are really high. Everything is on the chopping block, and it's to extend the metaphor, the chopping block is on a very unstable foundation. And now let's take a look at where the AI systems have gone. Well, one of the recent shows that I did here on Tectonic is when I talked to Laura Kolodny from CNBC about the Nudify activity on Twitter/X under Elon Musk's leadership. Elon Musk installed his AI bot called Grok, which took prompts from users to undress any woman or child who was depicted in a photograph that was uploaded to Twitter X, and it generated nude images. I mean, unbelievable that this wasn't shut down and that Musk wasn't drawn up on charges. I mean, I won't get into it. You can go into the archives at tectonic.fm. Listen to my interview with Laura Kolodny. I think it's important to understand the details of that case. The reason I'm bringing it up is because here we are weeks later, and the New York Times covered on January 22nd, 2026, here's the headline: Musk's chatbot flooded X with millions of sexualized images in days, new estimates show. And the article says, over 9 days, Elon Musk's Grok chatbot generated and posted 4.4 million images, of which at least 41% were sexualized images of women. So here we see the scale, the scope of where AI is spreading. We see AI unthinkingly, I mean, that's charitable to say it was unthinkingly, maybe deliberately posted into Twitter/X for this kind of outcome. And the scale is enormous. I mean, 40% of 4 million, that's over a million images just in 9 days. Sexualizing images of women. I mean, this is horrible, horrible behavior at scale. The bro's favorite phrase, at scale. It's happening at scale, and that is a good example of how AI is spreading where it doesn't belong at a scale that it should have caused it to be shut down already. So that was the story with Twitter/X. It turns out, though, that it's not just Twitter/X that's doing this. From CNBC, January 27, 2026, we have the story, Apple and Google host dozens of AI nudify apps like Grok. And it says, according to a report by Tech Transparency Project, there were, in January, 55 nudify apps on Google Play and 47 nudify apps in the Apple App Store. And this was despite these apps clearly not abiding by those app stores' own policies, which are, quote, designed to protect people from non-consensual nude imagery and non-consensual pornography. So here, friends, we see, again, if you look at AI in context of these unethical companies, you begin to see where the problem really resides. Because Apple and Google have a duopoly. I mentioned the concentration of power before. They have a duopoly. There are only two major app stores in the world. One is by Apple, one is by Google. And whatever those two companies allow to remain on their stores is what everybody has to deal with. And what do you know? Between the two of them, there were over 100 apps that were allowing people to take photos uploaded and turn them into nude images. And Apple and Google just let it go, because what do they care? The only thing that makes them move a little bit is when they get bad PR. And so because of the CNBC coverage, I think they probably reluctantly pulled down a few of them. But they are not making any moves to fully combat this and take care of it. Simply because, as far as I can tell, they're still looking for growth at any cost. And if it takes nudify apps, you know, harming women and children at scale, they don't care as long as they're getting more engagement. So that's where we are. If you look at the nudify apps, starting with Twitter/X with over a million images in 9 days and moving on to Apple and Google Store, the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store, between Twitter/X and Apple and Google, you see that these companies do not care, and they are going to continue to enable the spread of AI where it doesn't belong. Let's move off of big tech for a second. I mean, all of this is coming out of big tech, but let's look at one of the places where AI is spreading outside of big tech and its apps. Let's talk about the government. This was really crazy. If you really want a hair-raising article to read after you listen to this show, again, go to the links at tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm. Click the show for AI is spreading where it doesn't belong and find this story. It's by Jesse Coburn at ProPublica from January 26, 2026. And the headline is, Government by AI, Trump administration plans to write regulations using artificial intelligence. This, friends, is bananas. I don't know how else to describe this. The story says that the Transportation Department, which oversees the safety of airplanes, cars, and pipelines, plans to use Google Gemini to draft new regulations. Did you get that? Google Gemini is the chatbot from Google, and somehow Google has sold this chatbot into the depths of the government and into the Department of Transportation. And it's not simply to answer a couple of questions or wrongly alphabetize a few names of organizations. No, no. They are proposing, and when I say they, the Transportation Department itself is proposing to use the Google chatbot to draft new regulations, and not just like, you know, the sidewalk should be 1 inch wider or something like that. No, these are going to be the regulations for airline safety. Do you see what that means? Have you used AI at all? I mean, whether it's Google Gemini or any of these things, you've seen that they are full of errors. They're full of nonsense and chaos. Occasionally, they kind of sort of make sense, but then they veer into, as I said, nonsense. Do you want new safety regulations to be written by these things? No, you do not. Let me read you more from the story. Department of Transportation's top lawyer, I guess defending this idea, is quoted saying, "We don't need the perfect rule. We want good enough." Oh, boy. Boy. Is that what you want to hear when you're 35,000 feet up in the air? You know, we don't need perfect airline safety. We just need good enough airline safety. Let's let the AI decide what that means. Continuing with the article, these developments have alarmed some at DOT. The agency's rules touch virtually every facet of transportation safety, keeping airlines in the sky, preventing gas pipelines from exploding, stopping freight trains carrying toxic chemicals from skidding off the rails. Why, some staffers wondered, would the federal government outsource the writing of such critical standards to a nascent technology notorious for making mistakes? The answer from the plan's booster, I should say plurals, the answer from the plan's boosters is simple: speed. Writing and revising complex federal regulations can take months, sometimes years. But with DOT's version of Google Gemini, employees could generate a proposed rule in a matter of minutes or even seconds. Does that make you feel safer, friends, that a regulation that in the old pre-AI days would have taken weeks or months was output in a matter of seconds from an AI chatbot, and that is what is keeping the toxic chemical freight train on the rails? And that's what's keeping your airplane in the sky? I mean, again, AI is spreading where it does not belong. It's not just the Department of Transportation. Again, as I said, this is not an exhaustive list of every place AI is spreading. But I'm just trying to give you a couple examples so you see the shape and the scale and the trajectory that we're on. Reuters, January 29, 2026. The headline is, "Pentagon clashes with Anthropic over military AI use," sources say. So it looks like Anthropic, which has a large language model called Claude, and Anthropic has a major investment from Google. Anthropic is selling its AI stuff into the Pentagon. And the reason is, well, just should I even tell you, or do you want to guess? Like, what is the worst possible reason you can think that they would bring the AI into the Defense Department? What is the absolute worst slash most dangerous slash shockingly stupid reason to bring in AI? And if you really go the distance, you will guess the correct answer. I'll go ahead and tell you. From the Reuters article, the Pentagon is at odds with artificial intelligence developer Anthropic over safeguards that would prevent the government from deploying its technology to target weapons autonomously and conduct U.S. domestic surveillance. three people familiar with the matter told Reuters. So here we have Anthropic, again, growth at any cost, no ethics, no guardrails. They want to operate everything at scale as fast as possible. Who cares about any of the externalities? If someone has to die because of a mistake, it doesn't matter to them as long as they're getting growth. That is the Silicon Valley ethos. I'm not saying that it was printed on a sign or an internal document within Anthropic explicitly in particular, but just generally that is the big tech attitude toward their businesses. And Anthropic has somehow gotten Claude or gotten their AI into the Pentagon with the idea of, according to this Reuters story, two things. Number one, deploying lethal weapons without human oversight. I mean, directly, autonomously, with an AI engine making the decision. And number two, more domestic surveillance. More domestic surveillance. Because we don't have enough of a surveillance state already. Let's put AI on the job and just think of the growth. Think of the growth if we could surveil American citizens even more and in an automated fashion with AI. I'm pretty sure that the owners of Anthropic would not be subject to that intimate surveillance, but all the rest of us would be. Once again, proving my point I've brought up over the years, the fight ahead is between big tech and the rest of us. And this certainly fits that shape. So we see it in government. We see this at the Department of Transportation, within the Pentagon, in both cases, doing the things that are probably the least helpful things for AI to do in terms of writing safety regulations in 3 seconds and deploying lethal weaponry against whoever the AI thinks should be targeted. Let's move on to the next one. I mean, this is really... Sorry for the kind of depressing litany of these stories, but again, I think this is important. I mean, this is one of the biggest trends in technology right now, with AI spreading where it does not belong, and the money does not look good for the future, as I said at the top of the show. Okay, let's go on to education. Now, I want to bring up the source called The Economist, because The Economist, I read The Economist sometimes, and it's mixed on its tech coverage, but if I had to give it one orientation, I'd say that The Economist tends to be somewhat boosterish for the technology, because I think they're interested in the market growing, and so they tend to overlook some of the downsides of technology and look for opportunities for investors. I mean, I just think that is their angle. And fine, you know, that's their angle, which has made it that much more interesting to me when I saw this story come from The Economist. This was from January 22, 2026. The headline was, EdTech, that is to say educational technology, is profitable. It is also mostly useless. Whoa, that is strong language from The Economist. That is not boosterish at all to come out and say that educational technology is mostly useless. Here's what the story says. Although edtech companies tout huge learning gains, independent research has made clear that technology rarely boosts learning in schools and often impairs it. And it goes into the data, and there's research data that bears this out, which is to say that there has been a giant push on the part of big tech, especially Google, recently to get itself into schools, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, even higher education, pushing their Chromebooks, pushing their Google Classroom, any sort of surveillance hardware or software or platform to extend the reach of their surveillance capitalist model. And their stated reason, what they say publicly for this, is, oh, we just want to improve education. We want to make more opportunities for all students. I mean, give me a break, guys. I mean, does anybody believe that? I guess some people do, because the school systems are still working with Google on this stuff. Why don't they read The Economist? This is hardly a left-wing, you know, zine out there. This is The Economist saying, actually, we regret to tell you that edtech is mostly useless. This stuff should not be in schools. This is backed up by an article in NBC News. This is from January 23, 2026, and it's called Google's Work in Schools Aims to Create a Pipeline of Future Users, Internal Documents Say. So this was NBC News getting a hold of some internal documents inside Google, some slide decks and the like, that are talking about Google's own internal strategy for how they're going to roll out, how and why they're going to roll out Google platforms into schools. So here's what it says. One internal presentation slide, this is from November 2020, said that acclimating children to Google's ecosystem in school would hopefully lead them to use its products as adults. Quote, you get that loyalty early and potentially for life, unquote. Another undated slide deck suggested imagining a world where, quote, parents ask their children, why aren't you watching more YouTube? And, quote, school administrators shift budgets from textbooks to YouTube subscriptions. Oh, joy. I can just imagine the Google executives who came up with that fantasy. I mean, their annual bonus is based on how many, you know, percentage points they can grow their little slice of the YouTube empire, I guess. And so they're just saying, if only parents would tell their kids, put down that book and watch more YouTube. If only school teachers and principals would say, we're not using textbooks anymore. We're just going to watch YouTube all day. Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, have you seen what happens when you put YouTube on autoplay? Have you seen the recommendation algorithm? Have you seen some of the stuff that's on YouTube that's promoted by the algorithm that generates the most engagement and hence the most money and growth for Google's YouTube? It is the exact opposite of what you would want to show to a kid in school or a kid out of school or anybody. This is the last stuff you want people to watch. And yet, of course, the internal documents are saying, let's have this filter into schools and into families as much as possible. And we have to target the young because they are going to be our users for life, using their own phrase here. We're going to have them for life, which is not a new thing. Big companies have tried to hook kids on, you know, sugary drinks or cigarettes or whatever over the decades. This is nothing new. It's just that YouTube has a scale and an access to kids that no other consumer brand pre-internet ever had. And that's what makes it so dangerous. So when you look at the enormous investment into educational technology that, as The Economist says, is mostly useless, you have to think, AI is spreading where it doesn't belong. And again, if you look at the scale of these investments, you're looking at $700+ billion. There's a certain question that comes to mind just inevitably when you reflect on this just a little bit. And that is, what if we had invested the money elsewhere? I mean, just take EdTech, okay? However many billions or hundreds of billions of dollars have gone into EdTech that is mostly useless, according to The Economist. Just think what we could have done if all that money had gone to teachers instead. You could say, well, not all teachers. Why don't we fix the, you know, fix the infrastructure in school? Fine, do anything you want. Just fix the schools, give it to teachers, give it to the PE coaches, give it to the principals. I don't care. If we had just invested in actual education rather than delivering this treasure to big tech, imagine what we could have had. We could have had kids that were reading better, doing math better, thinking better, learning how to become citizens better. We would have been investing in our future as a society rather than handing over billions of dollars to the 8 dudes on the West Coast who, frankly, do not need another wing to their mansion. AI is spreading where it does not belong. Let's talk about ICE, shall we? Here's an area where, and this touches on the government, so this is sort of in the same vein as the Pentagon and EdTech and the Department of Transportation. ICE, as you know, is wreaking havoc on Minneapolis, and I really admire the people of Minneapolis standing up to ICE and taking care of each other and supporting each other and supporting the immigrants. I'm fully behind the people of Minneapolis, and I'm waiting eagerly for ICE to leave Minneapolis. People have pointed out in recent days and recent weeks that ICE has partnerships with different surveillance companies. This is how they are being able to, how they're able to do such targeted strikes on individual addresses. You know, they go to a certain home where they want to harass someone. Even if they're a U.S. citizen, pull them out in their underwear in the freezing cold, ICE is there to do that. How did they get a specific name and a specific address? It's because of the surveillance platforms that are proliferating in our AI-enabled surveillance state. And one of the companies that is enabling all of this is a company called Flock Safety, which runs a network of ALPRs, automated license plate readers, all over the country. And there are a number of municipalities that are beginning to say no to Flock because of its involvement with ICE. In fact, in The Independent on January 19, 2026, there's a story called Inside the AI Police Tech Firm Whose Data is Being Fed to ICE. And it says, cities across the nation are cutting ties with the Atlanta-based police technology firm Flock Safety after revelations that Donald Trump's deportation squads, that is ICE, have repeatedly gained access to its data. Many cities are canceling or suspending their subscriptions after a string of scandals over Flock's data being accessed by immigration authorities, that is ICE, racing to fulfill Donald Trump's mass deportation agenda. Among the cities that have ended or paused their relationships with Flock are Austin, Texas, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Olympia, Washington, Santa Cruz, California, Eugene, Oregon, Oak Park, Illinois, Staunton, Virginia, Flagstaff, Arizona, and Hillsborough, North Carolina. And I just like to have, you know, a round of applause for all of those cities for standing up to Flock and standing up to ICE and saying, no, you are not building your surveillance state here. The latest revelation is that activism, I'm going to read from, this is a headline from Futurism from January 21, that it's not just Flock. Activists, this is the Futurism headline, activists say Ring cameras are being used by ICE. Now, Ring camera is a surveillance doorbell made by Amazon. Maybe some of you have something or have a neighbor who has something like this. This is unfortunately a very popular piece of surveillance gear that people have on their front door, and it's a camera that can record anybody at the door, but also on the sidewalk or on the street, walking by, driving by, and that footage can be shared with local law enforcement, and now we're beginning to see possibly also filtering up, or I should say downward, into the clutches of ICE. And I want to play you this footage. This was from a viral short video by an activist named Guy Christensen, who had something to say about Ring doorbells. Let's go ahead and listen to this. A brief audio. It was about a minute and a half. Here's what Guy Christensen said about Amazon Ring surveillance doorbell cameras.
Smash your Ring doorbells. You need to smash your Ring doorbells. Amazon owns Ring, and they've decided to begin sharing surveillance collected from your front step with ICE and Flock Safety, weaponizing the surveillance against the American people. It's oppression. They're enabling and working with fascists. I have a Ring doorbell, and I'm going to post a video, hopefully later this week, smashing the out of that mother. Amazon also operates this surveillance mesh network called Amazon Sidewalk that ties together all your home devices that are connected to internet, and they devote a portion of your internet bandwidth to share surveillance across your neighborhood. And you know who's tapping into that? That's Flock Safety, that's ICE. They know everything in your home, and it's enabled by the mega corporations of our time, who are more than willing to just give it all up. They don't care about you. You are something to sell. It doesn't matter if ICE is gonna come knock on your front door because of a Ring doorbell video that the neighbor across the street shared that had you in it. They don't care. So smash your Ring doorbells. If you have home surveillance like cameras or something, make sure that you know 100% that the footage being recorded of you and your family in your home or whatever is only and can only be seen and shared with you. It's better if you just set up your own system at this point, because nearly every company is entering the surveillance industry, like the home security industry and all these things, in order to put surveillance devices in your home that they share with law enforcement. Smash your Ring cameras.
Smash your Ring cameras, says Guy Christensen. Again, that was embedded in a futurism story from January 21st, 2026. And he says it very well, that the Ring footage is being used in the surveillance state. Now, I should say that according to the futurism article, that someone at Amazon within the Ring team, a spokesperson, said that the collaboration with Flock isn't yet live. And even when it does get deployed, ICE won't be able to access it. So if you want to believe the spokesperson for Amazon, that they haven't yet turned it on with Flock, meaning they will soon, maybe that makes you feel a little better. Personally, I think first we have to ask, are they telling the truth? And even if they are, is it the whole truth? And even if it is, you always have to put on the end of spokesperson's statements the word yet. We aren't doing this yet. We haven't done this yet. The trajectory is very clear with Amazon Ring doorbells, which have been on a tear, you know, signing up these partnerships with local law enforcement, just as Flock has with local law enforcement. 404 Media reported last year that Flock's automated license plate readers, ALPRs, are in more than 5,000 communities across the U.S., and local police are now doing lookups in the nationwide system for ICE. So with Flock working so closely with ICE, Amazon through Ring working with local law enforcement and with Flock soon enough, if it isn't already, I think you can put two and two together and see what's going to be happening. The other important thing that Guy Christensen said right there that I want to highlight is that if you have any sort of surveillance gear on your home, in and around your front door, your backyard, internally, anything else, there's nothing wrong per se about surveillance gear if you want to keep your home safe, but you have to make sure that the footage does not go out over the internet to some Silicon Valley company, some VC-funded company that has growth at any cost as its ethos and may do who knows what with that footage, up to and including sharing it with ICE. So if you have surveillance gear, make sure it's on a closed circuit. The footage is captured on a device that's local inside your home and is not shared outward on the internet with any company. That's the only way that I would approve of surveillance in my book anyway. By the way, I mentioned that it was a short video that Guy Christensen put together. It was actually posted on TikTok. And I don't have a TikTok account, but I found this link somewhere and used the web interface to actually, it was through the futurism story that I saw that the TikTok footage. But it's interesting about TikTok that Guy Christensen is using, I guess, whatever, he has a lot of followers. Good for him if he's passing the good word like that. But it's important for us to understand what's happening with TikTok, because there has been a transition there as well. And TikTok, of course, uses AI in its filtering and its algorithm for what to send up to people's feeds and what to quietly send down and or censor. And that becomes important in this next story. This is from Truthout on January 28, 2026. The headline is, New U.S. TikTok Spinoff Will Be Controlled by Trump-Aligned Billionaires. So basically, there was recently a deal where TikTok would be bought by U.S.-based interests, because before it was owned by a Chinese company with ties to the Chinese Communist Party, which made people, especially lawmakers, nervous, because I guess they're concerned about a surveillance state as long as it's the one in China. I don't hear as much pushback on the American surveillance state. But anyway, to allay the fears of a Chinese surveillance state, they made sure that TikTok was then, the ownership was transferred to U.S. interests. And guess who had the money available to buy TikTok? It was U.S. based Silicon Valley billionaires, such as Larry Ellison, who owns Oracle. So as the Truth Out piece puts it, this deal puts Trump-aligned tech barons in firm control of virtually all major U.S. social media platforms. That is to say, Oracle's Larry Ellison, who now owns TikTok, Twitter slash X, that's Elon Musk, and then Facebook Meta with Mark Zuckerberg. All these guys love spending time with the current occupant of the White House. And by doing his bidding, they're able to get favorable terms for whatever deal they want. And so we can see this already happening on TikTok. There was a story in The Independent that said, quote, TikTok blocks Epstein mentions and anti-Trump videos. This is a claim by users. I don't think it's been fully borne out, but there's word on the street now that TikTok is already beginning to bury videos that might make the current occupant look bad. And why would they not do this is my question. Why would anyone be surprised by this? I mean, the current occupant does a deal, allows this billionaire to get control of this social media so they have their own propaganda arm. And in response, in exchange, they're able to make sure that critical videos of the current occupant somehow don't show up in search results anymore, don't show up on the feeds. So again, we have just in TikTok, we have exchanged one authoritarian regime, the one based in Beijing, for another one based in Washington, D.C. What's the difference, really? I mean, these authoritarians speak English, I guess, but I fail to see the dramatic difference between the two authoritarian regimes. So this is just I bring this up so that you see, again, AI is spreading where it doesn't belong. It is pervading our media landscape, and it is beginning to tinge everything in favor of the current occupant due to the billionaire owners of all of these media platforms who have done deals with the current occupant. AI is spreading where it does not belong, and get yourself off of TikTok. Get off of TikTok. Someone says, well, I love watching it. But you know what? Just try a day, try 2 days without TikTok, because do you want to still be on board with this thing when it goes full authoritarian? Do you still want to be hanging out there? I mean, look at what's happened to Twitter slash X, or for that matter, Facebook slash Meta. I mean, all of these are on the same downward trajectory, and why would you want to spend any time there? So AI, if AI is spreading where it doesn't belong, then friends, it's going to be up to us to find the little nooks and crannies where we can work together, we can communicate with each other outside of the reach of these authoritarian aligned propagandist platforms that are owned by those eight dudes on the West Coast of the U.S. And I hope that this show today has given you some sense of the stakes and why it is so very important. I didn't even get into AI spreading into healthcare, like the piece in the Washington Post from January 26, when Jeff Fowler let ChatGPT analyze a decade of my Apple Watch data. He said, now, first of all, why is Jeff, why are you wearing an Apple surveillance watch for a decade? That's my first question. Second of all, it's interesting that you would feed all of this to ChatGPT, but why? But anyway, he did it, and you will be astonished to hear that the results were less than exemplary. ChatGPT was making mistakes and seeming to say random things. And again, you have to ask, what is going to happen when ChatGPT is writing our regulations, claiming to diagnose disease based on our health data, and targeting autonomous weapons and infusing our propagandist media system and doing everything to shore up the concentration of power with current occupant-aligned billionaires. This is not a good situation for us. This is early in the process. I just wanted to take a show to give you a snapshot. I'm sorry this is not more positive or happy, and I'm going to try next week to give you a more positive show. But I do feel that this is very important. You are listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Dave Mandel. Until next time, friends, you know what to do. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. And to go out today, brand new song by Karuk called Scooby. I like this a lot. I hope you'll like it as well. Have a good week, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Good evening and welcome to an exciting new installment of this radio show, It's Complicated, an hour of prog and prog-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I bring you this show every Monday evening right here on these airwaves between the hours of 7 and 8 p.m., following hot on the heels of Mark Hurst and the Tectonic Show. Always a joy and a pleasure to be here playing music for you. And we're going to start tonight's show with you tell me, music from France. That's what we're going to start with. We're going to hear something from a group called Minimum Vital, I guess would be the French pronunciation, like Minimum Vital. And this is a group that's been around for a while, since I would say the mid-80s probably, released a whole bunch of albums, many of them on the label Musea, M-U-S-E-A, which is a great French prog-friendly label, let's call it. And we're going to hear a track from a 1990 album called Sarabands. And that's about all I have to say for now. This is the group Minimum Vital.